Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I haven't thought about it. I guess I'll deal with that one if that day comes. But, my focus right now is just to try and help this team get in the playoffs.
I feel like we've been playing well for a while, and things are starting to click. And the goaltending's been awesome. Our power play's been amazing. You know, everybody's doing a good job playing defense, coming back, helping the defense out. I think the D are getting up, helping the forwards, you know, whether it's trying to sustain an offensive zone time or, you know, have good transitions to the neutral zone. So it's been a good team effort.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the untradeable one. That is Brent Seabrook talking yesterday.
Untouchable.
We're delighted to bring in Charlie Rumi Liotis covering the Blackhawks for NBC Sports Chicago. Charlie, good morning. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Charlie.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
What was your take on Brent Seabrook yesterday? And, you know, can both things be true? Can the story coming out of Canada be accurate that they've talked to him, meaning his agent, and he hasn't talked to them, meaning the player himself?
Yeah, it could be true. I mean, who are we to doubt Brent Seabrook, but also who are we to doubt the reporting of Elliot Friedman? I'm not surprised that, you know, Seabrook denied it. I think he should, because even if the conversation did happen, it kind of puts him in a bad spot with fans thinking that he's going to nix a potential trade going forward. So I think it was a wise decision on all cases, even if the conversation did happen.
I think it's conceivable that he was telling the truth, Charlie. I think that, you know, his agent could have been in contact with a representative from the Hawks, and they may have had a discussion. Hey, if we do this, what do you think? And Seabrook might have not known that conversation was taking place. I think it's plausible deniability, and I think they have to explore some of these options without maybe kind of walking that fine line without offending the player and still finding out what's out there. In terms of on the ice, in terms of what kind of season Brent Seabrook has had, how would you describe that?
I think it's difficult because you always attach Brent Seabrook with his contract now, right? So you have to be careful how you evaluate the on-ice play and whether he's living up to that contract. And obviously that contract, no matter how you look at it, isn't going to look great. So I still think Brent Seabrook is an effective third pairing guy in a specialty team's role, either on the power play and the penalty kill. And I think he can be an effective player. The problem is you always attach the name with the contract. So that's the dicey situation. So I still think if you shelter him in that third line role, we've seen veterans across the NHL be effective in a third pairing role and things like that. He's not that top four defenseman anymore, no matter how you look at it. And that just comes with age and a lot of mileage and where the game is going. So, and I don't think that's a bad thing. It's just you have to utilize him in a way that best suits his needs now.
You know, he's an awful person for having somehow gotten that contract out of him. I mean, how dare he get paid? I just think that we're getting mad about a guy that doesn't want to, you know, he's got three kids. He doesn't want to move, maybe, or he doesn't want to waive that no trade clause they gave him. So why are you getting mad at him? I mean, there's a reason he got the contract that he has, and the fact that he's having a hard time living up to it as he ages is something you had to know when you gave it to him.
Right. You're exactly right. That's exactly why the full no-moving clause is in his contract, so he can be, because he wants to be in Chicago for the rest of his career. And right. he has three kids. He has a family that he wants to settle down here in Chicago. He loves being a Blackhawk. And yeah, it's completely his right to nix a potential trade going forward. Although he didn't do that, if the conversation he did not nix a potential trade, it's just he respectfully will decline waiving his no movement clause if approached by the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and I think that's understandable on a lot of different levels, Charlie. I think when you look at what's going on with the Hawks, 5 points out of the last playoff spot, five teams in front of them in the eighth seed, though, and I think that's a lot of ground to cover. Patrick Kane playing at an MVP-type level. Jonathan Toews still having a kind of a resurgent year. Alex DeBrincat playing a dynamic forward. How would you describe your surprise level with where the Hawks are right now and how well they're playing?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that they're only 5 points out of a playoff spot, and they just won their first four-game winning streak of the season, and they're still kind of in it. But at the same time, the percentage is so low because, like you mentioned, they have to jump six teams, including that final wild card spot. So it's nice to see. You like to see a winning culture in Chicago. That nobody likes the word tanking, especially the hockey culture. It's so different than the NBA or other sports. So it's obviously good to see, but at the same time, I think you still have to be honest with yourselves and kind of evaluate what you are as a team. This winning streak shouldn't change the way you approach this trade deadline, no matter how you look at it, because you don't want to deviate from the big picture plan. Like if you're going to be a seller, you want to be a seller, and you might want to do it soon because you're maybe compromising yourself for a top three draft pick.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that they apparently are so close to making the playoffs, even though there's five teams ahead of them. I mean, that's the NHL, and we've seen teams make a run. They're playing better, but what is their long-term plan? The problem they have is, you know, if you want to tank, it's hard to do it when you got a guy like Taze, when Kane is still an all-star, when DeBrincat's having a good year. Like, you go through the list, they're in almost no man's land, and that's a bad place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, the worst place to be in hockey is just missing out on the playoffs, but not being in a top, you know, five or top 10 position to draft overall, because then you're not getting an immediate impact player. So I think they do. They have to be honest with themselves what they are going forward and not deviate from the plan. I think what you will see is they're going to try to sell off the spare parts, some veterans that maybe are in bottom six roles or bottom pairing roles, so they can create these spots for the young guys and give these guys a look in Rockford. You have to start evaluating what you have in the system and how you can, you know, where these guys slot in, because this is another transition year, right? They keep saying they want to get better. So I don't know how you get better if you either stand pat or if you don't sell off some of the parts and create some spots for your younger guys and maybe accumulate those prospects and draft picks.
So does that mean maybe Artem Anisimov is on the move? Will he be dangled, Charlie? And what will be the approach with Duncan Keith?
Yeah, I'm sure Anisimov will probably be a guy, although I think that might be better suited for the summer because he's got 2 years left on his contract. And on July 1, that his modified no-trade clause turns into nothing. So he's open to go, you know, he's open for a trade anywhere. And I'm not sure teams are really looking at him as the missing piece to get them over the hump in the playoffs. And you would essentially be asking for 2.5 playoff runs from him. So I think that might be better suited in the summer. As for Duncan Keith, you know, you kind of lump him in the same group as Seabrook with the no movement clauses and the legacy players. I'm not sure if a conversation happened with him yet or if it's going to happen, but I think it should, because you owe it to him and those legacy players like Seabrook and Keith and where they want to fit into the plans going forward and whether they want to be a part of this transition. I personally do not think it would be wise to trade him because as soon as you trade a guy like Duncan Keith, I know he's 35 years old, you're immediately looking for his replacement. And I still think he's a top four defenseman for years to come. You just don't want him to be that top pairing defenseman. You're hoping guys like Joakim Harju and Boqvist can eventually step into that role.
What's the situation? Crawford has returned to some action. Where are they at with the goalkeeper position? Is there a chance that Cam Ward could be traded? What will happen here?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. You know, Corey Crawford's been skating for a couple weeks now, on and off. I asked Jeremy Colleton yesterday whether he'd been skating during the break, and, you know, he was a little mum on that, said he didn't know, and he's basically keeping his distance from Crawford and asking all the everyday questions that may be annoying as a player that he doesn't want. But I still think it's possible that Corey Crawford returns this season. It's not like he went through last summer when he was on the ice for 6 or 7 months and he had to get a month and a half of training camp just to get his conditioning back. And if he does return, it'll be interesting. And I think he's absolutely one of the front runners to be the backup next season if Crawford is healthy. And if that does happen, you know, a team could, you know, the crazy things happen in the NHL where around the trade deadline, if you're a playoff team and your star goaltender goes down, and maybe just for a couple weeks or so, Cam Ward's not a bad replacement. And I don't care what the numbers say. The underlying numbers say he could be a serviceable goalie under the right circumstances.
Charlie, you know, the Hawks are only 5 points out of the last playoff spot, but they're only 6 points away from being the worst team in the league. So you can go either way, and you're right. That sort of limbo or no man's land is the spot you don't want to be on in the NHL. The prize at the end of the, you know, everyone wants is Jack Hughes, the number one overall pick likely in the June draft, the center who's a teenager at this point. Do you think the Hawks are – can you see them being at a point where if they go on a little bit of a skid here, kind of orchestrated losing or being one of those teams that does go down the tank route? Because I have a difficult time envisioning that.
I don't think so. I don't know if they're going to be selling off their parts just to create spots and just to clear cap space and give themselves a better chance for Jack Hughes. I think if you're going to see a big piece move, it's going to be because they feel like it's a hockey trade, similar to the Dylan Strome and Nick Schmaltz trade earlier in the season, where they're getting a young player in return who's still, his potential is you know, he's still got a lot of hockey in front of him. He hasn't even hit his prime yet. So I think if you're going to see a bigger piece move, it's not just going to be because they want to better position themselves for a number one overall pick. It's they want to start getting better here. This is the second transition here. You can't go into this summer essentially, you know, telling guys like Kane and Taze that we still plan on competing for a playoff spot, and you're somehow getting worse roster wise. I don't see that happening.
I'm curious, Charlie, if indeed Brent Seabrook went along with it. I mean, he's got 5 years after this at almost $7 million a year in cap hit. How would you even go about trading him? I mean, what would you have to give up to get rid of the contract? Is there anybody out there looking for Siebes?
Yeah, that's the difficult part too. Like, I don't think there's a market out there for him, even if you want to try to explore it. It's going to take either packaging a really good prospect with him and retaining salary to try to do it. And so it just seems unreasonable in today's NHL where the salary cap teams that are trying to acquire Seabrook are not teams that are out of a playoff spot. Like they're in a playoff spot. So it's a large contract to try to take on for somebody who's not a rental. He's on the backside of 30 and he's got 5 years left on his contract. I'm not sure that's appetizing to any of those NHL teams.
He's got a $6.875 million cap hit until he's 38 years old in 2024.
Yeah. Right.
That's a contract nobody wants to take on. So this conversation about whether he would or wouldn't is great, is fascinating, but really it's a moot point because I can't see a team taking him.
Could he develop a skin condition of some sort? that's just
cynical.
That is so cynical.
Charlie, before we let you go real quick, how would you describe the way Jeremy Colliton has handled the win streak, the lose streak, his even keeled throughout the whole process?
Yeah, he's been fine. I mean, he's been dealt a tough hand trying to come in here mid-season where he didn't get a lot of practice time, so you don't get a full training camp. And here's my number one thing is the first day on the job, he was working with the team on the power play, and before morning skates, he was trotting the team out there 15 minutes early to work on the power play, whether it be entries and ozone cycle time. And he's gotten it's by far the best power play in the league since mid-December. So he's doing that right. I just think they don't have the roster construction, the roster players to get put over the edge. Like they've had 13 or 14 one-goal losses since that 8-game losing streak. Like they're in every single game. They just don't have the players to put them over the top. They don't have the depth players to kind of put them over the top. You're seeing guys getting overworked, like Patrick Kane's playing 25, 26 minutes a night. You know, at some point you would like to see that distributed and maybe play more of a four-line rotation. But I think all the guys are bought in. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Charlie Roumeliotis, thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate your
thanks,
time.
Thanks, Charlie.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, There's joy in every journey.